Okay, I call this meeting of the Housing Subcommittee to order. Roll call.
Tommy Mecca.
Here, present, whatever.
Jorge Rodriguez.
Present.
Stu Smith.
Present.
Bill Ambrum.
Excused, yes. Okay, is there any public comment for items not on the agenda? There's no public here. Okay, so there's no public comment. Seeing none, we move to regular business. The first item is a presentation by Matthew Denny of the National Lawyers Guild on his proposal to include senior evictions in elder abuse laws. Welcome, Matthew.
Hey.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, so I guess I just wanted to share, I'm here to share this information that I got from a memo I wrote this summer. I was actually just interning for the National Lawyers Guild for the summer as the Thomas Still intern, which is an internship where you work on LGBT policy issues for the summer, so it's a good experience. And I looked into the Elder Abuse and Dependent Adult Civil Protection Act, which is a California law. You might know about it, that basically allows for civil cases to be brought for victims of financial elder abuse. And I looked into how it's been applied to housing situations and evictions in the past, and then sort of wrote about how it could be applied or amended to offer better protections. So I don't think where to start with this, but
could you repeat the law, the California?
Oh yeah,
is it a civil code or?
Yeah, it's part of the civil code. It's
okay.
It's called the California Elder Abuse and Dependent Adult Civil Protection Act. And the relevant section, what starts off at California Welfare Institution Code, section 15600. But then the most relevant section is 15610.30A, which is the financial abuse section of the act, which is most is the section that's relevant to housing or eviction issues. And it makes it, it defines financial abuse as when a person or entity takes, obtains, or retains real or personal property of an elder or dependent adult for a wrongful use or with an intent to defraud or both. And under the definition of wrongful use, that includes taking real or personal property when the person or entity knows that doing that is likely to be harmful to the elder. And so that allows for kind of a broad interpretation. Oh, and also, it prohibits taking the property of an elder through undue influence, which could be applied to tenant situations where somebody might be pressured into taking a buyout offer, or in my opinion, it could be used when somebody's evicted and they don't know their rights, or the landlord just tells them to get out, or any kind of wrongful eviction scenario like that, I think, would apply. Then I just went through some cases which were kind of interesting. I guess I can just talk about some of the ways it's been applied.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been applied to both real property of homeowners, so both elders that are in homes that get foreclosed on or get sold wrongfully, or both leases with tenants.
So when you say it was applied to those cases, how did those cases turn out?
Yeah, so let me go over. So one, for example, with a foreclosure proceeding is a 2007 case called Feaster. And I have the citation if you want it, but
probably won't help me, but
what's that?
What's the citation?
Well, it's kind of complicated. It's 2007, mm-hmm. California Appellate, which is like APP,
right.
Unpublished. And then you can find it at Lexis 4570. But, so in that case, the plaintiff's home was in foreclosure. And she sold her home to the defendant because the defendant promised that if she sold her home to him, he would give her $10,000 and provide a place to live. And in reality, he bought the home and evicted her and then only gave her $6,000 and never gave her a place to live. And so that was a case where the intent to defraud provision was applied because he misrepresented what he intended to do with the plaintiff. And because the plaintiff was over 65, it fell under the Elder Abuse Act. Another example is where somebody sold title to a home that she held in trust for her son, and her son's friend, basically the home was falling below market value because of the housing crisis, this was just a couple years ago, and her friend said that he would buy the home and then resell it to her son at the same price to get it out of foreclosure. And then she sold the house and then he didn't do so, and again, it tried to evict her son. So again, the plaintiff in that case brought suit for fraud under the Elder Abuse Act and won. There's another case with mortgage refinancing called Zimmer v. Nawabi, which is N-A-W-A-B-I. And in Zimmer, the plaintiff had one of those like telephone solicitations where they offer to reduce your mortgage payment, and it sounds like kind of a shady business, but so refinance your home and stuff. So she talked to this company to refinance her home, it's towards a lower mortgage payment, and in reality the mortgage payment was twice what she was promised over the phone. And so again, on a claim for financial elder abuse, she won and ended up getting $10,700 back from it. So that's some of the situations where it's been applied in real property cases, especially
any,
with fraud.
Any tenants cases? Cases where people were renting?
With the renters cases I found, those were more about... I couldn't actually find any that where fraud was applied to rental situations. I did find them with wrongful eviction and with harassment, though.
Okay.
So one of the cases with tenants... so there's a harassment provision of the Act where you can seek protective orders if you've experienced any kind of threats, harassment, or other acts intended to cause emotional distress. And there's a case called Van Horn v. Morgan where the plaintiff was renting a house that was actually owned, this is kind of fascinating to me, it was owned by something called the Hollywood Women's Club, which I don't know if it's that glamorous, but I picture this being like some nice villa. But anyway, the club, I guess, had a new director and they were going through all these changes. And so the executive director wanted to retake the house that this tenant was living in, renting from the club. And the executive director first tried to file an unlawful detainer action against the plaintiff after eviction. And but then she dropped it. She actually decided not to go through with the unlawful detainer suit. But then after they did that, the defendant proceeded to lock the tenant's mailbox and also hired somebody to photograph her house. And so the tenant was able to file a request for protective order under the Elder Abuse Act for harassment. And it was granted. And also the order required the landlord to provide access to the mailbox again. So it's definitely an instance where, I mean, landlord harassment happened and you can apply the Act to it. And then another tenant case where it was applied was actually one with co-leases who were both renting an apartment together. And I think they were both on the lease. So they were both in Louise, and one of them was elderly and the other one was younger, and the elderly tenant had never actually lived in the apartment full time, but had just sort of been there off and on and had another house, but they both like split the lease and the rent and everything, and because of, for health reasons, the elderly tenant decided that she wanted to move into the apartment full time as well, and the defendant refused to allow her to do so, and then proceeded to move the property out of the apartment, the elderly tenant's property. Mm-hmm. And so the plaintiff the other tenant sought a protective order under the financial abuse provision of the Elder Abuse Act in order to prevent the other tenant from moving the property out, and then also to allow equal use of the apartment since they're both on the lease and they both had, you know, had it for years. And that can happen, I guess. And I mean, I don't know how that would apply to like a master tenant subtenant situation, but I would think it would be the same provisions of the act would apply, because if you're a subtenant, you have the same legal rights. So I'm sure that if, you know, a master tenant was trying to illegally move somebody's property out or evict them or something like that, you could use the act as well.
In the case of the club, what was the reason for the eviction?
That's actually not specified.
Not specified?
They just mentioned in the case that there was an eviction action that was filed and then dropped, and then the harassment started after the landlord dropped the eviction action. So I'm guessing it must have been something where they realized they couldn't actually do it. I don't know.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then something that gets a little more complicated is going into the wrongful use provision of the act, and it's kind of where I think the act could go the most, could be interpreted the broadest and maybe also be amended in a way that would give explicit protections against evictions for seniors that aren't explicit right now. Under the provision, which is 15610.30B, it's prohibited to take property of an elder knowing that it's harmful to an elder or dependent adult, and that includes the deprivation of any property right, including by means of an agreement. So even if there is an agreement, if one person knows that agreement is materially harmful to the elder, it can still be invalidated or still be prohibited under the act. And there was a case which was incredibly complicated in 2011 called Bonfigli v. Strachan. And in that case, it was real property, but basically this couple gave power of attorney over their land to this development company with the understanding that they were going to develop one of the parcels of land, but then the other one, they were just gonna maintain an option to purchase it, and they didn't actually own that parcel. So the couple gave them power of attorney over both parcels, but only sold them one of the parcels. And the company then, using that power of attorney, filed an adjustment application with the city of Santa Rosa to adjust the lot lines so that the parcel that they didn't own was smaller and the parcel they did own was bigger. And basically it gave them 60% of the parcel that they didn't own to the development company, and the city didn't realize this, so the transaction was approved, and so they basically got this land without paying for it, and the couple didn't even know that this had happened because they didn't know that their lot line had been adjusted. So basically the lower court had said that they didn't have a claim because it was legal to do what they did because they had power of attorney. But then the Court of Appeal overturned it because the statute only requires wrongful use and no knowledge of the harm to the elder. And so even if they had the legal power to do it, they were still doing it wrongfully because they knew that it would take away the property rights of the couple. So the court held that the age of the plaintiffs combined with a failure to pay them for the parcel was enough to create a claim for financial elder abuse. And so I think that has could have broad implications. There's another court that's kind of gone the opposite direction of that provision in a foreclosure action, 2011, where a couple tried to file a claim under the Elder Abuse Act in foreclosure because the lender just immediately foreclosed upon them without exploring any alternatives to it, and they brought the claim under the idea that the lender knew that it was harmful. and they didn't try to mitigate. But in that situation, the court actually didn't interpret the act that way and just said that it's not, it is simply not tortuous for a commercial lender to foreclose on collateral when a debt is not paid. So, yeah. But I think what could happen is that that act could be extended to recognize the property rights, the taking of a property right has been wrongful use whenever it's done without adequate compensation. And I sort of talk a little bit in my memo, and I was sort of theorizing about how a tenant's interest in an apartment, especially one that's protected by rent control, can be seen as a property right because it has a monetary value in having a cheaper apartment than market rate, and having it at the same rate is actually that would be something that would add value to the lease. And so I don't think the law does this now, but I think the law could say that any eviction of a senior from one of those units without compensation, that would cover the differential in the market rate value and what they were paying, or at least some kind of bigger differential. I think the statute could be amended to interpret that as wrongful use or wrongful taking of property. Mainly because the act says that any property interest is covered. So I just think that lease probably counts as a property lease does count as a property interest, and the difference would count as one. But right now, the way the act's applied and the way it's most useful in these cases is that it has a 4-year statute of limitations. And in some other cases, like with wrongful evictions, I'm not actually sure what all the statute of limitations are for different causes of action, but for some of them only are like 1 year to 2 years. So it's been applied to extend, to file a lawsuit if years after these things happen, up to 4 years. And then it also provides attorney's fees, which many of the other causes of actions do too, but then in cases where they don't, then you can get attorney's fees under the Elder Abuse Act. And that's important just to make sure that people will take cases, because otherwise it's harder to get an attorney if they don't think they're going to win the case and get money for it. So that's how it's been most useful right now. But I definitely think you could basically make the act more explicit on its existence.
So what could happen next? Scratch that question. New question. So we can only do this on the state level, we can't do it on the local level? Is there an elder abuse law on the local level?
Not that I know of, no.
It's a state law.
So yeah.
So it would have to be on the state level.
Yeah.
Is there anything that the local, because I worry about the state level, because I think,
yeah,
I think it's going to be a hard battle on the state level, whereas the local level, I think we could get 6 votes.
Yeah.
Is there anything we could do locally along these lines? It's the $1 million question.
What I'm curious about is the way this lifetime lease provision is going to turn out with TIC conversion, because I think how that provision gets, if that provision gets upheld, that they'll say a lot more about what you could do with other protections for renters. I mean, I don't see a reason why a city couldn't just say, as part of the process of renting in the city, you have to grant a lifetime lease to seniors. Or not subject them to provisions of the Ellis Act. But it's hard to know whether or not the city could do anything, because we're restricted by the Ellis Act because of Hawkins, and I don't know if any city chains that would affect the Elder Abuse Act would be seen as violating those, so, yeah.
How is senior defined in the state law? What age? I heard you mention 65 before.
Good question. Did I write that down? I looked it up.
Because you know, every act seems to define senior differently. Owner Movement is 60, Ellis is 62.
Right.
It's like, why can't we have a uniform number here?
I want to say it's 60, but I'm not positive because I don't have the law in front of me right now, but I think it was 60.
Is there any possible use of class action in elder care Ellis Act proceedings? Could a law firm or an ambitious attorney take all cases within the last 4 years and do it as a class action?
I think it would be possible if it's the same landlord or the same management company.
Right, and some of them are.
Yeah, so if you had a company that was systematically, if you could say that a company was systematically violating provisions of the San Francisco Rent Board Ordinance or wrongfully evicting people, I think you could. I don't see any reason why they couldn't be run through a class action.
Because that could establish a precedent.
Yeah,
the problem is that Ellis is not, it's the Ellis Act, so.
Yeah.
You're not really violating any law. And basically nobody has any rights under Ellis.
Right.
I don't know.
What are their rights, applicable rights under elder abuse, existing elder abuse laws that could be utilized in class action in this kind of a situation? And it maybe doesn't have to be Ellis Act. Just wrongful, termination.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah.
It's a really good question. I think we would need to.
What's interesting is that depending on how you interpret the Elder Abuse Act, you could say that it actually conflicts with Ellis in some ways. And so I don't know. I doubt that the courts would actually choose the wrongful use provision of the Elder Abuse Act over the Ellis Act, but theoretically, they're not necessarily compatible when one act says that you can, evict somebody once you're getting out of the rental business of their lease with no cause, and another act says that taking the property of an elder knowing that it's harmful to them is a violation of the Elder Abuse Act. So,
right.
I think somebody could try to say that the Elder Abuse Act trumps the Ellis Act, but I don't know if I don't think any court would go for that. But it'd be a good case. And the Elder, the Ellis Act, the protections that we have in San Francisco in terms of giving some form of compensation, is that true in all cities? Do all cities give something, or is
state law, right?
No, it's not state law, it's local law.
Yeah.
That was that?
No, relocation.
Oh, okay.
Relocation
yeah.
is local.
Yeah.
And I don't think most cities have relocation money.
Yeah.
I'll bet it's only San Francisco, LA, and West Hollywood, probably.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure Berkeley does. Probably just the municipalities with rent control do relocation, probably.
Yeah.
They're the only ones where the Ellis Act is used anyway. It's only used in rent control situations.
Yeah, that's true. So that would be the argument that I would make, is if there's not, especially if there's no compensation, it's definitely taking away property and violating that section without compensation and knowing that it's harmful. But
right. So how do we take a situation of a senior's not paying the rent, a non-payment situation, which is a fault eviction, and say it's elder abuse? Because I would love to, but I'm not sure how we do that.
Yeah.
I think that's the harder type of situation, the fault one.
Right.
Nuisance, non-payment of rent, those kinds of situations.
Those are harder ones.
So where is all this in terms of the National Lawyers Guild? Is this something that the Lawyers Guild definitely is going to be pushing, or?
There's been talk at the local level of getting housing rights task force back together and doing more on housing issues in the Bay Area. I think that's something that we're looking at doing more of.
Right.
Yeah, I think we'll see a lot more action from them, hopefully.
And is this report ultimately going to be submitted to the Board of Supervisors?
What, we're recording?
Are you doing
a memo?
Yeah, oh, you're just doing a memo, you're not gonna do a report ultimately?
Oh, no, no.
No?
This was his memo.
So what was the purpose of the memo?
Just to write it.
Just to write it?
See what I found out, yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of a research, it was kind of a research-based internship, so.
Any interest in sharing with it, maybe sharing it with like Tom Amiano, Mark Leno, some people who might be interested in looking into it?
Maybe, yeah. Want to modify it a little bit before I did that, but, yeah.
Because it's certainly a great idea, it's just.
Yeah.
I just would like to see it go somewhere.
Do you see something there that, with his permission, we can integrate in what we're going to present?
I don't know. Because it's state law. And we're only local. I don't know that we can.
Or maybe try to propose something local.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, do something local. Mm-hmm. If we did something local, could we do like maybe the human rights code or something? Or the thinking, what would we amend locally if we wanted to say evictions are senior abuse?
I don't know that thing. Okay. I didn't research local law at all. Because
we do have local anti-discrimination laws.
Right.
Obviously, the Human Rights Commission here is in charge of enforcing them. So I wonder if that's a place to look at the human rights laws and the anti-discrimination laws.
Yeah.
So you're saying that the State Elder Abuse Act defines some of this as discrimination, or does it not? It doesn't use the word discrimination at any point?
Well, it defines elderly persons and dependent adults as a disadvantaged class. So definitely.
Which
recognizes that
do.
which
the Human Rights Act here already does too.
Yeah.
Ah.
So
what if we can make the leap from that to eviction as elder abuse?
Yeah, greater protections.
Right. So maybe that's something we need to look into.
Yeah.
Is the human rights laws and. Any other questions?
And you could always say, like, locally, we're going to interpret the Elder Abuse Act this way.
That's right. We.
So.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. To say that.
Good point.
Yeah.
I think the city would definitely have some leeway there.
Sure. Okay. Because, I think we're definitely interested in adding something along these lines into our recommendations as a committee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's a matter of how do we word it, how do we, because we don't want to sound like we're totally off the wall.
Yeah.
We want to sound credible. We want to make a credible recommendation.
Yeah.
I think if we merely said something like, the city should support an effort to amend the state elder abuse laws, I think that's too vague and too easy for the city to get out of.
Yeah.
City can easily just say, oh, yeah, we support that, and nothing happens. So I'd like to see us do something that's.
Well, if the city has taken the lead on compensating LSAC victims,
right.
Wouldn't this be kind of an extension of that same type of thinking?
Could be.
Yeah.
We're usually far ahead of the crowd in all types of things, including compensation and protection.
Any other questions for Matthew?
What would the city attorney have any potential role in this type of work? What we're trying to do?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he would be the one who would know what to amend and how to best defend it in court for sure, and how to bring that petition out.
So maybe our next step is to invite somebody from the city attorney's office to come and talk to us.
Yeah.
Specifically about this idea.
Yeah. We just got a guy assigned to us in the grand jury again, so we just got a guy I have no idea what kind of side he takes. I mean, I think most of them, when they get into PR, are really interested in advancing Dennis's career.
Okay, well, any other questions for Matthew?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is helpful. Thank you. Helps us to put this all together and figure out where we want to go.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else that you wanted to
I was just
ask us
to
comment on or anything?
No, these all look pretty good. I'm looking at the
the
recommendations that are typed up today.
Yeah, this is all a draft. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, part of our test today is going to be to sort of refine this and put it into a form where it's presentable to the whole task force.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm sure all this is going to undergo a lot of changes before it's finalized, but these are some of the ideas we're looking at.
Yeah.
I think eviction protections are one of the most important things that we can do.
Yeah.
But again, it's coming up with ideas that are going to be, you know, that are going to be able to be implemented rather than just pie in the sky, you know, nice wishes, but not practical. So.
I mean, the thing that's funny to me is that there's all of these state laws that allow, like LS Act evictions and Coastal Hawkins and everything, those are all state policies that don't actually have to exist. I mean, under common law, you can actually have a lifetime lease in a building just in the way the lease is written, and there's nothing, courts have upheld those all the time, even though people have argued that it's a deprivation of, you know, deprivation of the right to convert property, basically, to sell your property. Those have still been upheld, and so the state, if the state just repealed their policies where they're not allowing the common law to go through, basically, then I think, yeah, the cities would have a lot more power to say, like, once you give somebody a lease, you've got to make sure they can stay there for as long as they want, so, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Matthew. Good
luck. Good luck in your
your
work.
Very good. Very good memo.
I'm back in class now, so it's doing 5 classes right now.
Wow.
Yeah. But I'm learning a lot more, so it's good.
Any other comments before we move on to our next item, which I believe is the recommendations? And you should all have a copy of the recommendations. I mean, what I did was I put them into a form that Bill was suggesting they be in, so that we can look at them and start figuring out what we want to keep in there, what we want to take out. Other things we might want to add, if we want to do other categories. I see, Jorge, you gave us some notes with your meeting.
There are some comments there from Grace Martinez, and then it's a newspaper clip that tells us that it's about the vacancy in San Francisco, mm-hmm. which is very limited, I mean, about 600 units only.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, I think coming up with something around foreclosures may be a little bit.
Why?
It may be a little bit difficult. Bye bye, Matthew.
That's it.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
You know, it came up again at the, and I'm not ever supposed to talk about the grand jury business, but so this is just anecdotally, but and it's come up repeatedly in the last month that there are 10,000 vacant units in San Francisco.
More than that.
Is it really?
The Coalition of Homelessness says 30,000.
Holy mackerel.
Okay.
So, that's something that we can address, you know? I mean, because, again, the city has taken a stand on a lot of things are revolving.
I see.
Around housing. I mean, if we could certainly make a recommendation that property owners be incentivized to put that property back in the rental market.
Some of them are abandoned properties too.
Okay, well then I think the city should try and act through eminent domain.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see why we couldn't put something in there about how we want those vacant units to be used for LGBT senior housing.
Yeah, and this is in different locations.
I don't have any breakdown on where they are. This is, you know, I hear this kind of stuff all the time, but I have
that's
no idea
what
how to track it.
Article says. Yeah.
Well, Stu, would you be willing to maybe call the Coalition on Homelessness? And,
sure.
I know they have the information. Talk to Jennifer Friedenbacher, who was here at our meeting a couple months ago, and like get all the background stuff on like how many units there are, how many are rental units, how many are just abandoned properties. And maybe we can, under number one, stronger eviction protection, well, no, maybe under more affordable housing, number two, we could add something about turning these vacant units into, vacant units into housing.
And there's also quite an inventory of surplus property owned by various city agencies.
Yeah, and you know, I'm on this group that where we've been trying to get the city to tell us exactly what they own. All we want is a list, and we cannot get a list.
No one, the grand jury can't get it.
I know, it's so
frustrating. And they tried over the years.
Yeah, we've got the, we've gone to the real estate department, we've gone to the mayor's office on housing, and nobody has a list. Hmm. It's incredulous.
Well,
how could the city not have a list?
Are you kidding? I mean, probably real estate interests don't want anybody to have that list.
Yeah.
Right. Probably. Yeah.
But I mean, the school district has tons of property too, and they won't give us a list either. And when you find an unused school building, they'll say it is in use, and there's nobody going in there, but it's being used as a model to test a new idea in the future.
Yeah, well, I put vacant units under number two. I added an H. Vacant units, turn vacant units into affordable housing for LGBT seniors. I think that's a really good suggestion, and maybe if you could do some research and just find out, get all the information you can on these vacant units. At least just a number that I know. I think it's the Coalition of Homelessness keeps saying it's 30,000.
This is Jennifer.
Yeah, Jennifer. 346-3740.
Jennifer Friedman, right?
And it would just, I think it's a great idea, but, you know, city won't tell us anything, so it's like, it's really hard. We're trying to get a property right now for an LGBT youth co-op housing, and we can't find out what's there. Mm-hmm. We identified one property, and then we found out that it was going to be impossible to get because it's owned by DPW. DPH owns it, and DPH won't let go because they're holding on to it as an asset or something. It was just, we even met with DPH, and it's just.
Well, I think that's exactly the answer. People are holding on to these properties as assets.
Because they're worth so much.
Yeah.
Because land is worth so much. Property is worth so much. So it's...
But apparently, I mean, and I have no idea, the city attorney did say it was questionable whether school districts had the legal right to hold property for future use.
Right.
When it should be converted to
need. Does any city department have the right to hold property?
Well, exactly. I mean, that's a legitimate question.
Why would the Department of Public Health need to hold property? You know? It's not part of their work. It's not going to. So I don't know. It strikes me all as very crazy, but certainly all those units could be used to house people. We could easily house everybody who's on the streets. But anyway, so maybe we should start at the top with number one, stronger eviction protections for LGBT seniors. So A is amend senior abuse laws. I think this is going to have to be reworded based on what Matthew's saying. This is going to have to be reworded. Amend senior abuse laws to include eviction as a form of elder abuse, since loss of housing is a health and safety issue for the elderly. Any ideas on how we, do we want to still include it? And if so, how do we want to, how do we want to reword that?
Well, I mean, if you want to amend it to the local level?
Oh, I guess we're, yeah, because I don't see us addressing state law in this necessarily.
No, in fact, I think we should stay away from that and make some kind of a note to the fact that we accept our limitations in dealing with state law.
Right.
And these are mostly aimed at, well, of course, they are also aimed at state, but the immediate goal is to get local legislation. So I would just do local. Or local with the goal of amending state law.
How about something like explore the, I don't know, explore is too weak of a word. It doesn't really mean anything to anybody.
Strongly recommend.
Recommend, yeah.
Recommend strongly.
Or,
Demand.
That's a little too strong. Something between recommend and demand, I think, is what we're looking for. I want to say
encourage.
Encourage.
Urge.
Yeah. Encourage might still be too weak.
Too weak.
Too easy to get away from. Too easy to get to ignore. Push. Urge.
I like that one.
Urge might be.
Yeah. Is that too pushy?
Yeah, is it too pushy? Well,
urge isn't that pushy, I don't know.
Urge. That's a lot of pushy.
Urge. How about urge? Urge our LGBT legislators. Let us put them on the spot directly.
Yeah. But we want them all.
And that also leaves open the state, you know, because urge our LGBT legislators to amend local human rights laws to include eviction as a form of elder abuse?
Yeah.
Okay. That might work.
I don't think we have to gloss it over.
Right. Urge our LGBT legislators to amend local human rights laws to include eviction as a form of elder abuse, since loss of housing is a health and safety issue for the elderly. How's that sound?
I think it sounds good.
Jorge, how's that sound?
Yes.
Okay. You know darn well that when we get this all together ourselves and we submit it to the full board, we're going to have a lot of suggestions for amending it.
Okay, B, establish a rental assistance fund targeted to LGBT seniors, including move-in money, security deposit assistance, and first month's rent to help those at risk of eviction.
Okay, and from where are we going to get that fund? That was my question.
I think that's going to have to be city money.
City money?
I think maybe establish a rental assistance fund within season of sharing, which is the pool of money that Department of Health uses for rental assistance.
Okay.
So maybe we can say within season of sharing. Or with season of sharing money, or... No, within season of sharing. Establish a rental assistance fund within season of sharing, targeted to LGBT seniors, including move-in money, security deposit assistance, and first month's rent, to help those at risk of eviction.
I think that's good.
Yeah, because season of sharing has a pretty big pot of money. Okay, everybody okay with that?
I think that's a very good idea.
Yeah.
Very good idea.
C, support state legislation to extend the time of the three-day notice to cure or quit for non-payment of rent to 14 days or more especially for seniors.
And we say advocate instead of support?
We could say advocate. The thing is that that bill is on hold right now. There was a bill
right.
that Almiano introduced, and the bill's kind of on hold right now.
Oh, I see, okay.
So that's why
so,
I was thinking.
Oh, I see, yeah, maybe that is better
that we
terminology,
it,
yeah.
Because Tom's coming back with it.
Okay.
In January.
Yeah, if it's existing, yeah, you want to support.
So I'm thinking.
Or you could maybe put support and advocate.
Yeah, support and advocate. I think that's good. And also we might want to say, this might be another one where we say urge, our local legislators to support and advocate for state legislation. That way we put them on the spot. Urge our local legislators to support and advocate for state legislation to extend the time of 3-day notice to cure or quit. Especially for seniors, okay.
Yeah.
D, continue the moratorium on condo conversions past the 10 years mandated by recent legislation in order to protect LGBT seniors who continue to be evicted by the Ellis Act or the threat of Ellis. Any questions?
I'd like to see that, but is there a way to phrase it that doesn't give it that eternal
right.
dimension?
Eternal in what sense?
Because, you know, you're talking about going past the 10 years that's already mandated.
Right.
And that without any definition, which I don't think there should be, but I think that's what people would jump on.
How about make permanent?
All right, there you go. Yes.
Instead of continue.
That's perfect.
That's stronger, too.
Instead of a moratorium, yeah.
Make permanent. The moratorium on condo conversions. Past the 10 years mandated by recent legislation. We can put past the 10 years mandated by recent legislation in parentheses, so it's not as emphasized.
Right.
Make permanent the moratorium on condo conversions.
Yeah.
Past the 10 years mandated by recent legislation in order to protect LGBT seniors continue to be evicted by Ellis or the threat of Ellis. Any
like
other?
It.
Okay. E, seniors who, the foreclosure thing. So. Jorge, any ideas on what we could do for foreclosures here?
I think that we should check what this lady says about it, because she sounded a little bit pessimistic about the legislation, yeah. That's what I got from her, yeah.
Okay.
So there was not that much information that I could get about foreclosure,
yeah.
Or what they're doing. If here is mailing, what they are doing is political activism. That's what they are enforcing and or involving with, yeah. Like going to places like Dianne Feinstein's house and started protesting, things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, she's urging a campaign to make people aware of the situation, it looks like, from what I read.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, that's a big part of all of our recommendation,
right.
I think, you know, but I don't know. You know, what is our goal in terms of, you know, the whole foreclosure mess?
Stopping them.
Right.
Stopping them. I don't see the city so much involved in that, you know.
Yeah.
Like I told you, like this lady in Richmond, that she...
But maybe it's another thing that we urge our LGBT legislators, state and locally, to
right.
propose legislation to protect
mm-hmm.
LGBT and all seniors from, I don't know, unfair. I don't know, not unfair. But.
This is a tough one because,
yeah.
you know, I don't
it's
know.
It's a tough cookie, yeah.
I don't know what the city can legally do. I know the city has extended just cause eviction protection to foreclosed homes, but that only protects the renter in the home, not the owner.
Not the owner.
We need something that protects the owner, because the renters are already protected. So how do we protect the owner? And nobody from MEIDA ever called you back?
No. This fellow Chayanne just referred me to Grace. That was my only connection with them.
I mean, Grace is great. I've known Grace for years.
Yeah, but MEIDA, no. They didn't.
But MEIDA, I know, is doing actual counseling. Oh, that they're mainly doing counseling.
Yeah, they're doing the counseling. Yeah, that's what they told me. Yeah.
They're not really doing advocacy. We need someone who's an advocate. Grace is an advocate. But I know Grace is involved in a million things.
Well, I think that legally there is something that the city could do in order to stop the foreclosures, you know.
See, the problem is it's the banks. You have to go after the banks.
Exactly.
And I'm not, what can the city do to the banks?
Work with the banks, yeah.
The only thing we've ever done that I'm aware of is stop banking with, the city stopped banking with their banks, but that hasn't done much of anything.
Yeah. I wonder if we should call for one of the local LGBT advocacy groups to do what MEIDA does, for instance, and be an advocate for LGBT homeowners.
Yeah, I think that's good. We have to be advocates.
Yeah, maybe that's something we could start with. Like maybe we could call on, who can we call on? Equality California?
You want me to
Human
that?
Rights Campaign? In our recommendation, can we say that we
the Human Rights Campaign could be one.
We urge the formation of an educational and advocacy.
There you go.
Advocacy group within. Human Rights Campaign or Equality California or something like that. I don't know who else might be appropriate to how about to defend and protect LGBT senior homeowners? Off the top of my head, this is just okay, so what I wrote was urge the formation of an educational advocacy group within Human Rights Campaign or Equality California to defend and protect LGBT senior homeowners.
I like that.
It's something, but you know, we can keep thinking about it. If you know anybody comes up with something better, certainly email it around. And
Doesn't the ACLU have a division for that? Don't they get involved in housing?
They don't really deal with foreclosures, right? Yeah. It's a shame because they're really effective.
It's a shame, yeah.
Very effective, yeah.
But they've got their hands full.
They have a lot on their plate, that's for
sure. With all the human rights violations in this country. F, encourage community legal groups such as the National Center for Lesbian Rights and the Transgender Law Center to do eviction defense work for LGBT seniors. And maybe encourage is too weak. Maybe it should be urge also.
Yeah. And I wouldn't limit it just to those.
Oh, no. Do you have other groups?
Well, I'm trying to think of the ones that helped me when I was being affected. I can't remember the names of them, though. I'm too old to remember.
Were they LGBT groups?
They weren't all LGBT. Yeah, yeah. In fact, most of them I don't think were.
No.
That's
the problem. That's why I thought of this, was because LGBT groups are not doing the eviction defense stuff.
Yeah,
it's being done
by
other
You're
groups,
right.
like my organization.
No, that's...
And I think it's...
No, that makes it
I feel like it's time that our group, since groups within our community are already doing legal work, why aren't they doing legal work with LGBT senior tenants?
Well, you know? I know that open house is not anything legal,
right.
But I mean, they do advocate for LGBT seniors.
Yeah.
Maybe we should urge them to seek funding to establish a legal defense capacity.
I think that's an interesting idea. I think it's something we should bring up at the meeting, and especially with Marcy.
We got three members on.
Yeah, we have three members with the task force. Maybe we should bring that up with
Michelle
them.
Michelle here, yeah.
Well, I think it's a good idea. I don't think they're set up to do legal defense.
No, I know they're not now.
Legal defense is a tremendous undertaking.
No, not that.
But I mean, if they were to absorb or collaborate or do something with an established organization, you know, I think they could do, or even maybe approach the Bar Association.
I think it's a good idea, but I think in the meantime, I certainly think NCLR and Transgender Law Center could do it tomorrow because they've got lawyers.
Let's do it.
They're set up to do legal work. This is something that I think they could do.
And but you want to change it to urge?
Yeah, I'd like to change it to urge. I would say so.
Kind of sexy, isn't it?
Yeah, the final
the imperious urge.
Urge community legal groups such as NCLR and Transgender Law Center to do eviction defense work for LGBT seniors.
Perfect.
Okay, G, amend local law to say that seniors cannot be evicted for owner move-in or Ellis Act. I don't know if either one of those would fly legally, but...
Well, at this point, we don't care.
Exactly.
You know, we're making recommendations.
Right, exactly. And I think the way it would work is that owner move-in eviction already says that if you're 60 or older and you've lived in your apartment 10 years or more, you cannot be evicted for an owner move-in. So it would be a matter of just saying, if you're 60 or older, you cannot be evicted at all. So, you're right. Let the supervisors worry about whether it's legal or not.
Exactly. You know, the city attorney will have an opinion immediately.
Yeah. And then Ellis Act, our local law already says that if you're a senior, you get a year to move. But this would be a matter of saying, no, you don't get a year to move, you don't get
you don't
evicted.
You
can't
be
evicted. I suspect that that's not going to be legal because state law says that you get evicted for the Ellis Act. But anyway, do we want to try it anyway, even though?
I think so. You know, I think
legally.
We have some passion about these issues, and you know, we can always be slapped down. We usually are.
Great. Okay. Moving on. Number H, establish a long-term rental assistance program, again, including move-in money, security deposit assistance, and first month's rent, specifically for seniors with AIDS. So this would be like the other one, and I guess we should add in there, like the other one, we should add in assistance program within Season of Sharing.
Okay.
And this is something similar to what the ASMR just
wants to. So maybe it should just, you're right, I forgot about the
Yeah,
right.
they do all that,
yeah.
They do it very good, yeah.
But aren't they limited? Isn't it only $500 or something? Or
yeah.
Yeah, they are limited.
And it goes up and down
so
depending on the
donation. So it's not a long-term rental assistance, no.
No, it's only...
It's up to $500 per year.
Per year, so you go back the next year for
Yeah,
for
no.
Assistance.
I'm thinking of something that would be monthly for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Like a long-term program.
See.
Okay. So that maybe somebody would get $500 a month for 12 months. Or 14 months, or whatever they need to get them really established and keep them from being evicted. And that's what I mean by long-term.
Depending on the case.
So Season of Sharing.
Yeah, and I'm thinking maybe a program like that could be administered by AIDS Housing Alliance.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Or AIDS Emergency Fund, if they're willing to do it.
Mm-hmm. Put both in.
I don't think we need to put it into this. I think we could put that in when we do the thing and we talk about how this is going to be implemented, we could say that the money would go to one of those two groups.
Okay.
Any other comments on that one?
Was the only addition there that we wrote within Season of Sharing?
Season of Sharing, yes. Mm-hmm. Great. And I'm going to find out, they don't call it long-term rental assistance, they call it something else. I couldn't think of an actual term, but I'll find out the...
Mm-hmm.
What do they call it? They don't call it long-term analysis. They call it something else. But anyway, I'll find out the actual term and insert it into the final copy. Okay, number two, more affordable housing for extremely low-income LGBT seniors, 0 to 30% of AMI, is needed in District 8 and the rest of the city. Any amendments to that or comments or changes we want to make? Okay. Hearing none. A, include LGBT seniors on the community-based work group. Wait a minute. To draft, oh, okay. Include LGBT seniors on the community-based work group to draft the, to draft the Mayor's Office of Housing Consolidated Plan to HUD. The Mayor's Office on Housing every 5 years has to do a plan for, to HUD, to the Housing and Urban Development.
Mm-hmm.
That basically talks about what are the needs in San Francisco, what is the city going to do to meet those needs. So they come up with this plan, and they got to submit it to HUD, and they got to follow it. And at the end of 5 years, they got to say, they got to report on how they fulfilled that plan or not. So what I'm saying is that work group starts meeting in the spring of 2014. The plan, which is submitted every 5 years, looks at the needs in the city for housing. LGBT senior housing should be part of any recommendation for increased housing.
I think that's a lot of words, but it's to the point. It's what
yes,
we want.
Yes, and we should include LGBT senior. There should be LGBT
right.
seniors represented on that work group. So
yeah,
that,
I think
there
that's
could be,
yeah.
So the work group. That those housing needs can be part of recommendations. Even though I'm told that the way it works is that they're not allowed to like say we need 500 units of LGBT housing, but they can say there's a huge need that LGBT seniors constitute a group. It's like this runaround because there's federal anti-discrimination laws,
yeah.
So you can't say we need to build 500 units just for these people.
For
you can't
group,
build
yeah.
500 units for LGBT seniors. You can build 500 units that are LGBT senior friendly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the way we get around it. That's well, where everybody gets around it. So we say we need units that are friendly to LGBT seniors, but nobody gets excluded. So the units could also include straight
open
people.
Because
you can't discriminate.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can say that there's a need for this population to have
kind
housing.
Rephrasing, yeah.
So it's kind of a tricky thing, but the main point here, I think, is that we need LGBT seniors on this body to be advising in the creation of this plan. Because if not, I think we're going to be left out.
Okay.
Anyway, any additions?
I think that's important. I think it should stay
okay.
as is.
B, encourage LGBT community organizations to raise money for LGBT senior housing.
Good.
And do we want to say encourage or do we want to say urge?
Encourage and urge.
I kind of like urge.
Yeah.
Because encourage sounds so wimpy.
Okay.
Because I think when you say encourage, nobody listens. Urge or some island. Okay, C, encourage, but how about urge again?
Let's go urge.
Urge the development of affordable housing for low-income LGBT seniors in the Castro Upper Market area. I wonder
yeah.
if that should, yeah.
Just out of curiosity, how did they avoid having any form of the low market in all of these developments? There's not one going in mm-hmm. and out. How did that happen?
Yeah, it's very sad.
No, I mean, I think that's a legitimate question.
No, absolutely.
I asked Scott Wiener and he goes, oh, it's way beyond me.
Yeah.
Because we're being taped, I'm not going to comment.
Oh, okay. So obviously, but
I will
is
say
it that
this.
Recent?
I will say this. The problem is developers are allowed to opt out. So
right, I know.
Right.
But where does that money go?
That money goes to the mayor's office on housing.
How much did they, of those six or seven developments, how much money did the mayor's office on housing get?
I don't know. I don't know exactly.
Is it enough to build two or three units of housing? I don't know.
I honestly don't know what the amount is. All I know is that when I was working on 55 Laguna, Brian and I had to fight tooth and nail to keep the units affordable, even the LGBT units. The LGBT seniors, originally, there was not going to be 100% affordable units in open house. We had to fight
wow.
like hell to keep every unit in open house affordable. And the affordability level is going to be from zero, meaning no income, to 50% of AMI. And we had to fight for that. And then the BMR units on that site which are the below market rental units, the developer wanted to do them at 80 to 120% of AMI. And we hit the roof. We said, absolutely no way. So we got it down to 50%. Was the lowest we could get it. We tried to get, I tried to push down to 30%. But they kind of looked at me like I was from Mars.
So I got another curiosity for me is, okay, so Trinity in the massive development here, what I've been reading is about 500 units are lifetime for the previous tenants
right,
of the
right.
motel or hotel.
Right.
At the rates they were paying then.
Right. Because, yeah, I was part of that fight. What we did was, yeah, we basically got the landlord to voluntarily extend rent control, the rent control from the old units that those people had, and move that into the new units that they were going to occupy, because the new units do not have rent control.
Right.
So we got the landlord to agree to do that for the life of the tenant. So it's basically a lifetime lease at the old rent.
But now, does the rest of that development have any BMR in it?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
I don't believe that it does. But, you know, we were lucky enough to get what we
got.
Oh,
yeah, no, that was wonderful for those
tenants. We fought
like
hell just to keep the tenants, because it was largely an elderly population of people being displaced. It was largely an elderly Filipino population.
Kind of like international hotels.
They were amazing. Yeah, they were amazing, though. They were such good organizers. They were amazing. Oh, my God, they were fabulous. Because I remember being in meetings with them, and they were so together and united in their demand, which was, we are not going to be moved into a new unit and lose our rent control, because then we won't be able to afford it. So they fought, and Chris Daly was amazing. Daly really championed.
The hero, yeah.
Yeah, he really championed. Well, he got it through the board. He's the one who really pushed it through the board.
But that's kind of miraculous for Angelo San Giacomo to give up so much.
He was up against the wall because the public opinion was against them.
Father of rent control, right?
We did such a good job of, and the tenants did such an amazing job of presenting a public face. Everything that they did publicly was so good. Their comments were great. They were always on message. They were amazing. They were absolutely amazing, these tenants. And a lot of them had never organized before. You know, and we sat with them and taught them how to organize. We just gave them pointers on what to do, and they just
they were good students.
They took the ball and they were unbelievable, the kind of organizing that went on there. I was so impressed. I really was, as an organizer.
It's a real success story.
Yeah, it really was. But you got to fight so hard for everything, and we can't fight on every development. There's so much development in the city.
But what prompted NEMA to include BMR and the, I mean, they invited me to submit an application because I have Ryan White.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And nobody else is allowing Ryan White anymore.
Right.
Is that a deal that somebody hammered out?
I guess it was. A lot of times that's what happens. Deals get hammered out.
Okay.
Or there's lobbying, or there's a fight that goes on.
That's another big development.
Yeah. I'm wondering about this one. I think maybe urban development, affordable housing for low income. I think for low income, we should definitely specify 0 to 30% of AMI.
Okay.
So that so people understand that we want people who are on pensions, SSI, other benefits, people with HOPWA vouchers. We want to hit the people who really, really are the ones that are the most needy. As well as people on minimum wage, that would hit all those folks, 0 to 30. But I guess my only problem with this is, who are we urging? Urging development.
Well, I think that it's going to come down to our local legislatures and administrators, you know. I mean, I think that the mayor's office and the board of supervisors, as well as our state leaders, LGBT leaders.
And local associations, yeah.
How about urge the mayor's office on housing, local LGBT politicians and housing advocates to come up with a plan for the development of affordable housing for low-income LGBT seniors in the Castro Upper Market area.
Would you mind reading that one more time?
Sure. I was kind of writing it as I was thinking of it. Urged the Mayor's Office on Housing, local LGBT politicians and housing advocates to come up with a plan for the development, and then the rest of it, development of affordable housing for low-income LGBT seniors in the Upper Castro Market.
And did you want to have the 0 to 30%?
Yeah, parentheses, 0 to 30% after low-income.
So it's urged the Mayor's Office on Housing, local LGBT politicians and housing advocates.
Yes, we definitely want housing advocates in there.
Why would you, I know that the Castro area, but why shouldn't we try to broaden the area and make it more citywide? Because it's,
I think saying, we have to at some point, but I
still
think
was
it's,
saying the Castro is becoming so expensive, you know,
proceedings
that it's going to be hard.
In the district where they either do live or want to live.
Right.
You know? Yeah, but it's, you know,
but it is a citywide, I think. Everybody.
No, I think it's, I agree that it should ultimately be citywide, but I feel like it's a way to maybe preserve the neighborhood for people who aren't rich.
Of course.
Because right now it's,
I think everybody's
it's
been
waving
the white flag.
Very expensive.
Can't believe it.
No, it's hopeless. The Castro is so expensive. And this would be a way of at least forcing there to be some kind of affordable housing in the neighborhood.
I was in a cab with a young guy, 26-year-old fellow. He was going to the airport to go to China. He works for Google. And we talked for about 20 minutes. He pays $5,500 a month for a one bedroom in the Castro area.
Oh my God.
He just bought a Tesla automobile for cash. He saves $10,000 a month. I mean, he's 26 years old, you know? And so he's worried about housing, you know? But he thinks he's got a great deal.
He's worried about housing.
And he's paying $5,000. No, I know, but there's a generation in this city that doesn't comprehend
absolutely.
What we live with.
That's part of the problem.
No, it's a huge
it's,
part
or
of the
it's
problem.
A very big problem, exactly. Yeah.
It's a huge problem.
Yeah, those people are living in another planet. Yeah.
Yeah.
They must be making $300,000 a year.
Well, a lot of them are.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them are making $500,000 a year.
That guy must be making.
You know, and they get stock options, and you know, I don't know if they're ever going to be able to hang on to that kind of income. But
it's totally obscene.
We've been through it before, though. I remember.
I know.
The last bubble.
Okay, so we got urged Mayor's Office on Housing, local LGBT politicians, and housing advocates to come up with a plan for the development of affordable housing for low-income, 0 to 30% of AMI, LGBT seniors in the Castro Upper Market area.
Yay.
And then, you know, when we write up the rationale for this, we could talk about how ideally we want the whole city, but that we feel it's important to preserve
the
Castro neighborhood for low-income people as well as
low-income wealthy. LGBT people.
Yeah, LGBT seniors as well as the all the rich people who are now calling it home. D, lobby to expand the availability of HUD housing to LGBT seniors, adding LGBT seniors as a preference category.
Now, you kind of said we can't do that.
Well, for some reason, HUD does.
Okay.
I don't understand why. But HUD is federal, so HUD can do whatever they want.
Okay.
But HUD does have preferences.
Then let's do it. Leave it the way it is.
Which makes no sense, given that but anti-discrimination laws are not federal. They tend to be local and state, right? Are there federal anti?
Yeah, there are.
There are federal
anti-discrimination.
Yeah, that's right.
Laws,
there are. Yeah.
There are a range of ones, but you know, RENDA,
gender,
for example,
race,
yeah.
National
yeah.
origin.
Yeah.
Right. But HUD, for some reason, does have preferences.
Well, I think you leave that one as it is.
Maybe HUD calls it something else. Maybe they call it set aside for preferences. You know what? I should double check that. I'm gonna check whether it's actually called set aside, just so we make sure we have the right language. I will check. I get confused because some agencies call it set aside, some call it preferences, some call it other things. Okay, so that's okay, everybody?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. E, set up a community land trust co-op housing situation for LGBT seniors.
Does one exist?
No, not for seniors.
So maybe create?
Create. Yeah, create is a better word. Create a community land trust. And this is kind of a pie-in-the-sky idea because, you know, the land trust would do it in a heartbeat, but the problem is acquiring the land is so expensive.
Again, so, then you look at properties that aren't being...
Exactly. Yeah. Ah, so maybe we should add that in here. Set up a community, perhaps with a vacant property.
Vacant property.
With one of the city's vacant properties.
Yeah, and I mean, at some point, I think we're going to have to take a chance and use the phrase eminent domain.
The last time I mentioned that to Olson Lee, the head of Mayor's Office on Housing, he said to me, don't go there, don't go there.
That's what everybody's going to tell you, but I mean, it could certainly be a recommendation that could be slapped down.
I know, no, he's very adamant. He does not want to go to
eminent domain. Nobody does, but it's...
I know.
It's becoming the only recourse. You know?
I agree.
Let them eat cake.
I agree, and I'm not afraid to say it at meetings, but, you know.
Tommy, this is similar to what Tommy and Michael presented in the meeting the last time about Los Angeles, that they had a project like that?
No.
No?
No, it's not. That's not a land trust.
No, that's a land trust. Okay.
No, but it's similar in that I think that was all, was that also a co-op house? No, I don't know if it was a co-op.
It was a co-op, yeah.
But it wasn't a land trust. So, okay, next page. What time-wise?
Did we do F?
We're fine.
Oh, did we do F? Oh, yeah, no.
Mine's on my page.
How come F was on your page different than it was on mine?
I printed mine out.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I printed mine at work. Oh, I see. It's different on the...
On the printout that she gave.
On the printout that she gave, yes. Okay, F. Increased funding for housing search, counseling, and assistance for LGBT seniors.
I think that stays as it is.
I put this on here because the AIDS Housing Alliance already has a housing search, counseling, and assistance for LGBT, for people with AIDS. So I was thinking, rather than reinvent the wheel, we just increase the funding for the thing and add on an LGBT senior specific. And this is something that actually Open House could do. Because Open House already does workshops on
right.
how to fill out applications for affordable housing.
Yeah.
And this could be an expansion for Open House. But that's something, again, I think we can expand on when we do our actual report. But I think that might be the home for it. But this would be a way, because, I get so many people coming into work asking for assistance, because we give out a list, of affordable housing list, to people, but we don't help people actually apply. And people look at the list and they're like, how do I do this? What do I do?
It's overwhelming.
And what you have to do is each listing,
you have to call
them individually, get an application, find out what the process is, find out how you qualify, blah, blah, blah.
And they're all different.
And they're all different. Yeah. And it's overwhelming to people.
Yeah.
Why can't we have some uniformity?
To me, that should somewhere fall in the realm of the mayor's office on housing, to stabilize, to unify, to... You know,
yes,
uniform process.
Absolutely, know. And there's been talk of that for years, but it's never been done.
Well, developers love it. I mean, they weed out so many people just by people can't.
And so many people don't bother.
Well, they're not going to. It's overwhelming, like you said.
And the other thing is that it's only available in English.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I get
Spanish-speaking
people coming in all the time, and then what I have to do is to translate for them. Just translate some of the listings and explain that they need to get somebody to help them with, because I can't go through every listing on there because there's too many listings.
But, you know, that's discrimination at the local level.
No, it absolutely, that list should be in Chinese, Spanish, Russian, Tagalog. But anyway, it's all frustrating. The whole housing thing is, as we know, is beyond frustrating. Anyway, G, Establish an eviction prevention project within the LGBT community geared to seniors to do education and advocacy on tenants' rights and refer people to legal resources. And that would go hand in hand with the other one.
To open house?
No, there was another recommendation to, I'm getting confused here. Oh, is that still going? That's still recording us. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Anyway, I think, yeah. The question, I guess, ultimately we'll have to deal with the question
yeah,
of we'll just, who would have to do this, but.
Okay. All right.
So I guess I'm seeing this along with like the rental assistance programs as, you know, part of sort of an effort to prevent evictions that would come within the community.
I see related to F, yeah.
Yeah, it's related to F, yeah, the legal, that's the one I was looking for. It's related to F on number one, urge community groups to do eviction defense work. So we have the legal groups doing eviction defense work, and then we'd have another project that would be geared to doing education and advocacy on tenants' rights with seniors in our community. So I guess, you know, a logical place for this would be the AIDS Housing Alliance also, since they already do that for people with AIDS. Maybe they could expand to, I don't know, them or I don't know who else in the community. The community center would be another logical place to do something like this. But anyway, any questions, comments?
And then you added 2H, right?
Yes.
Turn vacant government buildings into affordable housing.
Yes, turn vacant units into affordable housing for LGBT seniors. Now, how does that work with, okay, we have a land trust idea, and we have a plan being drafted. Yeah, okay, turn vacant units into affordable housing for LGBT seniors. Again, I think we can leave this vague, and then we'll have to develop it when we actually write the report. We'll have to develop the rationale for it and more a better idea of exactly who's going to do it and how it's going to work. Should we move on to 3?
Yep.
We're making great time. Wow.
Yes, very.
We're going to get out of here before 3. Okay. We can actually take a short break while Jorge's out of the room. Since we take a moment to breathe. So when did you start?
So I just started last week, actually. Last week was my first week on the job. So I'm finishing 2. Excited for the holiday.
Yeah.
So what do you do in the community?
Is that still recording?
It is. I can actually.
Ask for the break.
Yeah. So, 1:30. Well, we might be able to get through the rest in half an hour.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, the only reason I said 3 hours was just I was being, you know, very.
No, that's fine.
You were
terrifying
generous.
Us. You were just terrifying.
I was just terrifying. And myself. I'm the person who believes in 1 hour meetings.
Me too. It's a hard one to enforce, too.
It really is. So, okay. Where were we? Number 3, right?
Yep.
Address habitability and livability issues in apartments in which LGBT seniors live, especially those in SROs.
I think that's fine. That addresses that.
As a category, okay. Yeah. A, conduct outreach to community groups that work in SROs in the Tenderloin and Mission, where many LGBT seniors live, to make them aware of and sensitive towards the needs of LGBT seniors. I would add Chinatown as well, because there's a lot of SROs in Chinatown. So let's see, SROs in the TL Mission and Chinatown. And there is a Chinatown group, Chinatown Tenants Association, that works with seniors and SROs. Any?
Looks good to me.
Yeah. Okay, so moving along. B, ask DBI, the Department of Building Inspections, to make habitability complaints from senior tenants a priority, including those who live in SROs. And I think we could spell
that's
out.
That's an important one, yeah.
Yeah.
Think, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. People in SROs live in the most horrendous conditions imaginable. I never could believe it. As many times as I've been to SROs, I just still can't believe
we spent 3 months when I had last grand jury, I was on SROs, and so we toured dozens and dozens of them. And it was unbelievable, the disparity, but I mean, basically, it's kind of a license to steal if you run those things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, people think they're not making any money. They're making a lot of money.
And the rents are high.
I know.
$350 a week.
Yeah.
To stay in one little tiny room.
Hovel.
With roaches and bed bugs, without a bathroom, without
any cooking facility.
Right. $350. I mean, wow. Okay, C, requested AIDS organizations ask DBI to inspect and sign off on a hotel room before they place a person with AIDS there. And from my own experience, I've had experience where I've been called into a room, we called by someone with AIDS who's been placed in a hotel where they have roaches, bed bugs. I went to one where the hotel was obviously a crack hotel, because when I walked in the door, in the lobby, there were all these people acting out, screaming, and the place reeked of urine. It absolutely reeked. When I walked in the door, it was like, wow. And there was feces smeared on the walls.
Oh, God.
Of the thing. And the guy at the front desk was behind this
cage.
Yeah, this cage. He was in this cage, so. And you had to be buzzed into to get to this guy's room. I had to be buzzed into the hallway because there was a gate. And the guy's apartment, there was a green liquid dripping from the ceiling in the corner. Green. No idea what it was. Couldn't have been healthy. Something green dripping.
Soylent green.
Yeah. And there were roaches like this, just crawling around. It was the middle of the day, just crawling around like nothing was going on. So I went back and I called the agency that had placed them there. And I said, you know what? I'm holding a press conference tomorrow morning unless you transfer this guy today. And I got a call back about an hour later saying, he's being transferred tomorrow morning. So that's why I think something like this is important. Because
I couldn't agree more.
I don't see why people get placed in these rooms. Doesn't anybody look at these rooms before they place them?
Do we know who owned those the physical properties of these SROs? I mean, the buildings?
They're usually private landlords.
They are private. That's what I thought.
And they contract out with management.
And they have a contract with the city.
Yeah, they contract with agencies or the city or whatever.
Incredible.
But it seems like nobody's going to look at the rooms.
No, nobody's after
there's
it.
Just, there's an empty room saying, place somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that, and maybe we should not do request, maybe we should say urge. Unless we come up with another word that means urge, but urge seems like a good word.
Yeah, that is.
Urge AIDS organizations to ask DBI to inspect and sign off in a hotel room before they place a person with AIDS there. And then, as a companion to that, D requested, how about urge again? Urge that any LGBT organization that places people in SRO rooms should make sure those rooms meet the city's habitability standards and that they are inspected by DBI before the tenant moves in. I don't know if any LGBT organizations are actually placing people in SRO rooms. I think it's just the AIDS organizations, but I thought it might be good to just cover our backs in the future. In case any, because I know Lyric is planning at some point to do some of youth and stuff.
The San Francisco AIDS Foundation does get involved with this?
The AIDS Foundation would be covered under C. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and AIDS Foundation, I think the AIDS Foundation, no, the AIDS Foundation doesn't place people, do they? Do they place people?
I'm not sure.
I don't think they have a master lease program.
They what's their alternate, you know, the other thing that actually pays the rent? It's not the AIDS Foundation that created a shell corporation so that people didn't know.
Emergency fund?
No.
Oh, I know what you mean.
So at any rate, so because they pay my rent, you know, but it's never under their name.
Okay.
But they didn't do anything about placement. They're a contractor that pays actually issues the check.
Yeah. Can we think of anything else that needs to go into three? Because there's only like four things here. Anything else that we might want to I wonder if we want to, talk about, I've heard stories about management in some of these SROs being really homophobic toward people.
I've heard
and
that
transphobic.
Too. In fact, we found that several years ago, grand jury. Mm-hmm. Found it.
Oh, that's right. Oh, the grand jury.
But I can't.
There was also an SRO. No, but the SRO collaborative, I think, also did a report.
The people that were there?
Yeah, I think maybe, did they do a report that talked about that?
Stuff.
Somebody did a report that talked about that. Or maybe it was the Senior Action Network report on SROs. I don't remember. Too much information in my brain. But maybe we could, but trying to get these hotel managers to agree to training is going to be virtually impossible. And we've already got the, maybe that's already covered because we got the thing about the, where is it? The number A, conduct outreach to community groups that work in SROs. So maybe that would cover it to make them aware of and sensitive towards the needs of LGBT seniors. I don't know. Because I just know these managers are just, this is not going to be any way to enforce anything to get them to. I mean,
maybe our press conference when we issue our report. We're standing somewhere prominently, and somebody might be embarrassed if they saw this. Although they never are, really.
Anything else under this category?
No, I'm just trying to think of that. There's no real application for landlords or, you know, I mean.
No, license, right. Licensing. No.
Yeah, licensing. That's awful.
Okay, so we move on to four. Four, gather information on the housing needs of LGBT seniors. Would make our work easier. Uh-huh. A, mandate all departments and all agencies with which the city contracts to keep records on the sexual orientation and gender identity of seniors they serve.
Yeah, I mean, keep isn't necessarily the right.
Yeah, the city could mandate it. Sure, if the city wanted.
Oh, but I mean, this sort of record keeping, would it negate privacy laws?
I don't know. I don't know. We ask it on our intake. Uh-huh. And we get city money. We ask it because of the city money we get, because Mayor's Office on Housing asks us in our reports to them, we have to tell them how many LGBT folks we serve. So that's why we started doing it. So,
well, if it's an existing policy, then I say, yeah, this is perfect.
But there is no citywide policy. I think Mayor's Office on Housing does it, but I don't know that anybody else does it.
But I mean, it's got this precedent.
Right,
done, you know, so I think we have every right to go ahead and ask that all agencies do it.
And it should be mandate that.
Yeah.
That should be that all departments and all agencies.
In terms of how it would work, would it be on a form where people would check something off if they felt comfortable checking something off?
It would be an intake form. Yeah. Or
this is probably underreporting there as well.
Yeah.
But well, some data is better than none.
Even my agency, a lot of times, we give people the intake when they walk in the door, and a lot of people do not circle LGBT.
That's understandable.
Yeah, they don't circle any of that. But that's okay, we can't force them.
Right.
But it does give us some idea.
Sure.
It shows us that we do serve an LGBT population at my job. Anyway, anything else on that? I mean, all we can do is propose the idea. I mean, the city's going to reject it if they want to reject it. But it certainly would make it a lot easier for.
Well, we found that every aspect of this task force has found that there's just no records.
There's no records
anywhere.
Yeah, especially on the housing stuff.
Right.
I think in many ways we've had it worse than any other committee. Because there's virtually nothing.
I think you're right.
There are no records anywhere on housing stuff. So, B, record in the city's biennial report on homelessness how many people are LGBT and senior. Because now the city is now reporting in the biennial report, they're now asking homeless people if they're LGBT. But
they are?
But we need the senior piece as well, I think. So.
Oh, I see, okay.
Yeah, or maybe we should record in the city's bylaw, or maybe we should say, yeah, the record is probably the wrong verb there.
Track.
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 Track is a better word. Yeah, track. Track in the city's bylaw report on homelessness, how many people are LGBT and senior? Anything else on info, gathering info? Anything else we can recommend? Okay, moving on to our last category, number 5. Make the city's homeless shelters LGBT senior friendly. I'd like to make them LGBT friendly, period, but yeah. Our task is senior, so we got to say LGBT senior friendly. And in making them LGBT senior friendly, they're going to make them LGBT friendly in general anyway, right? I would think. A, mandate that the city conduct sensitivity training with the staff and the residents of all of its shelters in order to make them more LGBT senior friendly with a timeline for when this training will be completed. Actually, you should probably say when this training will be started and completed.
Very good.
Yeah. Anything on that? This is actually an idea that's come up before, that the city, that HSA, Human Services Agency, which runs the shelters, has mentioned before, but it's never been done as far as I know. Mm-hmm. Or maybe there's been scattered trainings, but not enough. So I think it's good that we push it again. Any comments, additions, deletions? Okay, B, expand the current LGBT shelter, which will open early next year, with emphasis on more LGBT senior beds. The current shelter is going to be 24 beds, and we know that that's insufficient, but that's all we could get.
And where is that?
It's going to be at 21st and South Van Ness. Mission Dolores. Dolores Street Community Services is going to be operating it.
Uh-huh. Is that the one that Lara Guzman is involved?
She was on the committee.
She was, yeah. Okay.
Her, Brian, myself.
Okay.
Jennifer from the Coalition of Homeless. A whole bunch of really great people.
Good.
I love Laura.
Oh, I love her too.
She's amazing, but her agency is going to be one of the intake places where people would go
to get a bed. Center, okay.
Yeah, one of the.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about that. I think.
And that's where it used to be, Dolores Street Community Services?
No, that's where Dolores Street Community Service runs their Latino men's shelter, the day labor shelter.
That's,
they already have a shelter
like
that they've been running for 10 years in that location. It's a church. And they run it on the first floor, and then our shelter's going to be on the second floor.
Okay.
And I have to say, our shelter's beautiful.
Cool.
It's a really nice room, and the room overlooks a balcony that overlooks a whole courtyard, really nice courtyard. It's sort of like on the side of the building, so it's away from the street, from South Van Ness, which is kind of a busy, crazy street, but this is off from there.
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't get the traffic noise, you don't get, you know, you're not looking down at traffic, you're looking down at the courtyard with
What is
trees.
The cross street again? Umbanes?
It's 21st.
21st?
It's like, it's the 1000 block, 1095 maybe. It's a church, Santa Marta.
I think it's
an Episcopal church.
Yeah.
And the minister there is real progressive.
Yeah.
Is this the first LGBT shelter in the city?
It's not the first. It's the first one that's going to be for adults. Okay. The last one we did was for youth. The last three we did were for youth from 18 to 24.
Okay.
This is going to be 18 and up, all ages. So there will be seniors in it, but it's not going to be predominantly senior. Well, who knows? I suspect it's going to be predominantly youth, because that's the greatest numbers will be from the young people. But certainly there will be seniors there. And that's why I thought maybe what we need to say is that we need to expand this so that we get more senior beds. Because I think we're going to see a great need for that. We don't have any numbers. We don't know how many seniors are LGBT seniors.
Well, I know that LGBT folks are terrified of identifying at shelters because they're really, I mean, sometimes they're beaten up.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah, the report that the Coalition on Homelessness did showed that.
I mean, it's pathetic.
The population that gets harassed and beaten up the most at shelters, transgender folks.
Yeah, absolutely.
70% of transgender people who took part in that study reported harassment and violence against them at the shelters.
And what percent of violence was against transgender?
70.
Oh, was it 70% reported then?
Yes, 77% reported.
Oh, but does anyone know how much of the violence generally was directed at them?
No,
Because I'm sure it's disproportionately high there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was the reason why we started the LGBT shelter to begin with, was because of that report and because of we were getting a lot of clients coming into my office and Brian's office, a lot of LGBT folks coming in who were homeless and who wanted someplace to go other than the shelters because they were getting beaten up. So that's how all that came about. Anyway, anything else under that category that we need to add?
That's a very good idea.
So do I hear that we want to make this our report?
I think we should. You know,
so, I don't.
So, do we want to pass it on in September to the task force?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then open ourselves up for the questions and suggestions, and yeah.
And it's to say we're going to get a lot of suggestions and questions. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, but I think that we've agreed pretty much on all of these things. I think we're pretty well able to defend our
yes.
our suggestions.
Very, very good. Thank you so much, Tommy.
And if anybody else comes up with any other ideas, please email them before September. We can always add them on.
Okay.
If we all agree, we can add them
on. So I'm going to try and talk to Jennifer.
Yes.
Is that information going to be something that we'll try and incorporate in here, or?
No, I think that's for.
Okay, it'll be anecdotal for our work
for
in general.
Our report.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think that'd be good because the vacant use that will provide justification for our saying that.
Right.
We want some of these units to go to seniors because there's a lot of them out there. There's certainly an adequate number out there. There's also the legislation that Chris Daly did that said that the city, any vacant lot the city has that can be developed into housing, has to be developed into housing for homeless people first. So the city has to develop into homeless housing.
I've never heard about that.
That's never happened. There has not
no
been,
wonder I never heard of
that. That legislation was passed in 2002. There has not been one property developed into housing for homeless people from those vacant lots.
Well, have they been developed?
Yeah. They're still sitting there. And then that's the list that we can't get. Because nobody has a list of how many properties there are and where they are.
They have them. It's
weird.
The one to
show
grand jury subpoenas people.
I know.
And they won't tell you even under subpoena.
I know.
You know, and that's a judge saying we're going to drag you in here. Unbelievable.
And we wonder why we have a housing crisis, right? Anyway.
There's a lot of reasons for that.
Yes, I know.
This is kind of the center of real estate greed of the universe, isn't it?
Yes. So any other business? Yes, we're being recorded.
Oh, I do that all the time.
It's okay. Any other business?
No.
Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay, we are adjourned.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.